Bridging the Political Divide, How to Foster Understanding, and Why It's Important. All sorts of surveys and research confirm what seems apparent. People in the U.S. are becoming more and more politically polarized, and political segregation is growing. Americans are more likely to live in a community with others who share their political beliefs, watch the same television shows, and, as a recent New York Times article showed us, even go to church with those who are like them politically. We don't know each other like we used to. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will meet a man who is trying to change this by bringing together liberals and conservatives to talk and, more importantly, listen. He's calling his project the Makeshift Coffee House. Also here today, the chair of both the Maine Democratic and Republican parties. How did we get here and how do we change it? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. There have been other times in our nation's history when partisan politics seemed beyond hope or reconciliation. Anyone watching cable news or reading political blogs can see evidence of a deeply divided country. So what, if anything, can be done to get the opposing parties talking and working together? Today, I'm joined by the leaders of Maine's two major political parties. I'm also joined by a professional mediator who's been organizing meetups to try and bridge the divide. With me in our studio, Greg Freshley. He's the organizer of the Makeshift Coffee House Project and a professional meeting moderator. Dr. Demi Kazunis is chair of the Maine Republican Party, and Philip Bartlett is an attorney and chair of the Maine Democratic Party. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you concerned with how partisan our politics have become? Have you any experience bridging this divide? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome all of you to Maine Calling. Craig Freshley, I want to start with you. They're called makeshift coffee houses. How'd you get the idea for this, and why do you think it's important?
Oh, thanks for having me on the show, Jennifer. I have facilitated hundreds of meetings across Maine and even across the country, and many of these meetings are contentious. You know, there's a conflict, as there is in politics. And I've seen over and over again how when people understand each other, a lot of the contention and the conflict goes away. Seeing that we are more politically divided than I can ever remember, I thought it would be a good idea to create a forum where people who think differently, people who have political views, can come together and simply understand where each other is coming from. When we fail to understand where our adversary is coming from, we make stuff up about them.
How have these been going so far?
I would say pretty good. We've had five, and people seem to really like them. They very much appreciate the opportunity to talk with people who are different.
Demi, why do you believe the rhetoric is where it is today? Why are we so divided?
Well, you know, I'm fairly new at this process, right? I've only been chair for the last 4 months, and I am incredibly surprised at the rhetoric that is out there. It's been fairly aggressive from where I sit. I do believe that this is just coming from my point of view. I think that when President Trump was elected, I believe that probably the Democratic Party was surprised. Probably like a lot of us were, that that Donald Trump was elected. And I think people do not like change anyways. And this is a fairly strong change. I mean, this is really, our country is going down a different path than it was for the last 4 years, for the last 8 years with President Obama. And I think that what we're doing is we're hearing the displeasure of the public out there is just intensified because of, I think, the media. I think the media is really playing into this, and unfortunately, they're profiting from it.
Now, when you say the media, do you mean everybody, or do you mean the partisan sort of cable news, AM talk radio kind of
Well, I mean, obviously, not the public, not this station. No, I'm just kidding. But I think internet. I think Facebook. I think the news stations. I do think that everybody's played a role. I think the newspapers have, and I think instead of trying to bring people together, showing both sides, I think there'll be always some stations that will take one side or the other. I mean, everybody's guilty of it.
What about you, Phil? Why do you believe we've gotten here?
I think one of the big problems that we see is there no longer seems to be a common set of facts. I think there was an age when everybody watched the same three major news programs, had the same basic facts in front of them, and then made political opinions and had arguments about what they meant. Increasingly, it seems to me that people are picking, choosing which facts they like or don't like, and not really engaging in an argument from that core set of common assumptions. I also think there's so much noise that's out there with social media, with just the busyness of people's lives, that people are yelling louder and louder to be heard. And I think that has a huge impact as well.
Okay. And what about you, Craig?
How we've gotten to this point?
Yes.
I agree with my colleagues here. And I think that the internet has had a huge impact on our growing political divide, because more than ever before, we have access to the facts that we want to believe. There's a book out recently by a guy named Jonathan Haidt. It's called The Righteous Mind. And he documents research that says fundamentally we make up our minds first, and then we go out and try to find facts that back up what we sort of intuitively thought to be true. Mm-hmm. And with the internet, that is really easy to do. We don't have to make the effort to go talk to people face to face. We can very conveniently find facts that back up our intuition.
So I want to ask both of you, Demi and Phil, you know, you are both in a position where you're trying to get your candidates to run for office and to have those candidates win. Does that conflict, the whole idea of trying to pick winners and get them elected, does that conflict with the idea of trying to talk across the political divide? Is your position by nature, and I'll start with you, Phil, partisan? You know, are you in a position where you can't really be part of the solution, or if you can be part of the solution, how?
Well, first, I think when people run for office, they have to have a strong sense of why they're running, the values that they're advocating for, and they should have strong opinions about what they believe and convey that to voters. Once elected, there is a responsibility to govern and to work across the aisle to find common ground where it can be found. When I was in the state Senate, I routinely worked with Republicans to move the ball as aggressively as I could in the direction I wanted to go, but also found that when you are willing to compromise and come back again a year later, you can often get more done that way. So it's a combination of having really strong principles and values that guide you and that you're a powerful advocate for, but also understanding that there's a larger responsibility to get things done once you're elected.
Demi, though, isn't there risk, which political party you're in, if you compromise, that somehow compromise is looked at as a bad word these days?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance. There's no doubt about it. I think you need to have strong convictions. You need to know what your platform is, what you personally believe in. And at the same time, then to set forward what you want to accomplish, then there needs to be compromise at that point to, if you will, to get your point across. I mean, you know, we elect our legislature and then they have to go up to Augusta in the case of the state of Maine or whatever, you know, federal government. And then they need to work together to move whatever bill or whatever you want to sponsor forward. So that's when the compromise occurs. I agree with Phil, you still need to have a conviction. You need to know what you believe in and then advocate for it.
Let me ask you this, Craig, though. Are you a drop in the bucket when you're creating your makeshift coffee houses and people come together to understand each other and you have a dozen people there or a couple dozen people there? Are you really swimming against a very strong and powerful tsunami that we don't really have power to change?
I don't know if I would characterize it that extreme, but I will acknowledge that this is kind of a minority and rare activity. I will say that many people seem to want to talk across the political divide. There is a real hunger for that. A lot of people are afraid. And for some people, the way to deal with that fear is to reach across and understand people who are different. But for many other people who are afraid, their way of coping with that is to withdraw, to demonize the other side, and to shy away from the other side at all cost. So it's a hard road ahead, I think, to reconcile our political divide.
Are you optimistic? Do you see this nation healing? I mean, after all, this is the nation that went through the Civil War.
I don't know. That's a very good question. And I'm not willing to say at the drop of a hat that I'm immediately optimistic nor pessimistic. I don't know what our future holds.
I'll ask you the same thing.
No, I'm a true optimist. I think I live every day thinking that things will be better tomorrow than they are today. Do I believe? Yep. I think that we are going through an era, an informational era, and we don't know how to cope with it. I think 50% of the people don't even know how to access the information highway and how to get what they need from it. And then the other half gets too much information, is bombarded, and becomes anxious because of it, because they're just overloaded. And so I think that we will go through a transition where things will change and meet the needs of the people, and then we'll move forward. I do see this happening in the future, but right now we're just so bombarded.
Phil?
I'm also an optimist. I look back at the Founding Fathers, and at that time period, the press was as nasty as can be. The attacks that they leveled against one another in the early days of the Republic, and yet they believe that the freedom of the press and the right to free speech were paramount, and that if we keep talking, we keep advocating for what we believe, that ultimately cooler heads will prevail and that we'll be on the right path. So I'm confident that as we move forward, as we get more familiar with these technologies that we're using, we'll develop ways to cope and to be stronger as a result.
One thing that's so striking to me is I think that especially in a place like Maine, in a small town, people knew each other. They lived with each other. In their own families, there were political debates. And I think now, even within people's families, at things like Thanksgiving dinner, people stay away from politics if they diverge, in what they believe, and they do it intentionally. Is demographics working in a way that we won't? You know, we talk about red states and blue states, and even in Maine, there are red towns and blue towns. Are demographics just simply working against us? No?
I think demographics are the solution. I think, you know, I was a political science major, and we learned that most political conversations are agreement conversations. So that's been true historically, that people tend to live in small communities. They tend to talk to one another, have similar points of view. I mean, there's a reason that you grew up being told not to talk about politics or religion at the dinner table, because they were divisive. I think as there's more and more diversity, there are more and more tough conversations happening, that at the end of the day, we're all going to have a broader perspective as a result.
All right. Well, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. If you'd like to send us an email, it's to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're talking about bridging the political divide. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Bridging the Political Divide. With me in the studio, Phil Bartlett, who is chair of the Maine Democratic Party. Demi Kazunis is chair of the Maine Republican Party. And Craig Freshley is a professional meeting moderator and creator and organizer of Makeshift Coffee Houses. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Demi, I understand you've been to one of Craig's makeshift coffee houses. Tell me what the experience was like.
I think that Craig hasn't given himself enough credit for what he does. I was invited. We hosted one, and I think I was invited to one or two, but I definitely went to one. There were people there. There were probably, I'd say, 30 to 40 people there, which was well attended, to my surprise. And there were people there from probably polar opposites as far as their viewpoints. There were a couple of folks. That one guy was an extreme conservative. I know who he was, and, you know, was somewhat angry. And then there was another man who was who totally believed in climate, you know, the extreme climate change, and that his grandchildren may not survive the change in temperatures, and said that he could never speak to anybody that didn't believe what he believed in. And yet at the end of the day, these two folks were speaking to each other. And I thought that was pretty amazing because they really were strong on their thoughts.
Craig, who can host a makeshift coffee house and how does it happen?
Oh, thanks for asking. I am open to anybody hosting a makeshift coffee house as long as it is held in a place that all types of people with all political views would feel comfortable attending, that it's free and open to anyone. We always have food. We always have music. And I moderate the discussion. But if somebody wants to help with a welcoming venue, organizing volunteers, food, music, and promotion, I would like to talk with you about
hosting.
So
what kind of places have had them so far? I'm going to guess libraries, Rotary clubs, that kind of organization?
Libraries have really taken it up. In fact, we've had several at libraries. We have an upcoming one at York County Community College. Looks like we're going to be having one at a church. We're going to have one at a coffee house hosted by the Central Aroostook Chamber of Commerce. The hosts and the venues have so far been a real variety of places.
We're going to go to Portland and Owen. Hi, Owen. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey. Well, I just wanted to talk about, like, because I consider myself a progressive, but I didn't vote in this election, and I wanted to say why, which is that I feel like there are a lot of people who are not particularly on either side of the political divide, and the low turnout kind of reflects this. And I'd like to hear that talked about, because I couldn't vote Republican or Democrat because I felt as though the political divisiveness comes from overreach on the part of the Progressive Party, because one party wants to go somewhere and one party wants to stay in the same place. So the determination of that gap is done by one side. And so I felt that Hillary's campaign is particularly divisive. And could you talk about people like me, maybe? And I guess to give an example, I was just thinking of, for instance, like, because it's been in the news the last couple of days, Obama's coal initiative to rush the end of the coal industry in the U.S., there was a backlash against that because they were rushing something. And he discussed that. Thank you.
Sure, I'm happy to take that. I think the parties have to be big tents and welcoming to a diverse point of view. Certainly on the Democratic side, we pride ourselves on that, and I know the Republicans do as well. I think it is important that we field candidates who can reach out to as many people as possible. And I think that citizens have to meet us halfway and make a commitment to voting every single time. Having people show up, making decisions has a huge, huge impact on who gets elected and on the tone of the campaign. If you're a reliable voter, it's more likely that you're going to be called. You're going to be specifically reached out to by campaigns, and you're going to be able to make your voice heard during that process. So I think it's a two-way street that we need people to commit to being engaged, and we need politicians to be willing to reach out and to have honest discussions and listen to diverse points of view.
We're talking here about bridging the political divide. The leaders of both political parties in Maine, or both major parties in Maine, are sitting here before me, both agreeing that it's good to talk to one another. Demi, how difficult is it during campaign seasons when you do not have control over all the mailings and all the phone calls that are in support of one of your candidates?
That's correct. I mean, PAC, the way our structure, our governmental structure is, we have PACs that legally can send out their own mailers, can express their viewpoints, and sometimes it's not what even the candidate likes to hear or see about themselves. So it gets complicated, but we don't have an input. We only have an input of what, say, in my case, what the Maine GOP puts out. And, you know, I've often said to those that will listen from my office, no bashing, no negativity will come out of my office. I want it to be a very positive, you know, election process. As far as primaries are concerned, we let the people select, and then once the nominee comes out, then we help elect, and that's our motto.
So how much of an issue, though, you bring primaries, which is on a national scale, and Phil, you're nodding, the first person who told me about this whole idea of primarying and the fear that the gerrymandering, as he said, was bringing to candidates was Mike Michaud. The very first person I heard talk about this was telling me what he was seeing in Congress, that he was seeing colleagues who couldn't work across the divide because they were so afraid of what would happen to them because their congressional district had been changed and had been changed so that the majority was either Republican or Democratic, and they had to not come to the middle, had to go to the ideological edge of the spectrum to just win the primary. Since Mike Michaud told me that, of course, this has become a subject of great national debate. Does the divide heal without a change?
Well, we absolutely need a new process of redistricting. I think we've seen them gerrymandered all over the country, and that has had huge negative consequences because people are insulated from, I think, a broader public perspective. In Maine, we fortunately have an independent commission that does it, equally balanced between Republicans and Democrats, and that has worked fairly well and kept our legislative districts far less gerrymandered than what we've seen in other states around the country. But it's also important that the primary itself tends to bring out the most passionate on both sides of the aisle. And what that means is that a small number of very passionate people are influencing the candidates who are chosen. So this is another place where if you really care about politics and there's one side you tend to agree with, join the party, get involved in the primaries. If you think you want a more moderate person or a different kind of candidate running, then you need to show up to vote for that person.
Right. And here in Maine, a lot of people have chosen to not be members of a political party. Mm-hmm. There are more people not registered with the party than are registered with the party in Maine. And that's been the case for a very long time. So we'll go to Dave, who's calling from Denmark. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling. Dave, go ahead. Oh, I think we've lost Dave. We'll go to Phil in Camden. Hi, Phil. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much. This is a terrific program and something that I think all Americans are thinking about at one level or another. And as a scientist and an educator, I thought it might be worthwhile commenting on the use of the word fact, because although it may seem a small thing, when I heard, I think, all of your commentators talking about that people can go online and find whatever fact suits their state of mind or their particular interest or their beliefs, that at least among the scientific community, that's not possible because we have a very firm definition of fact and recognize that there are very few of them actually available. On the internet, you probably will find vanishingly few facts. There certainly is a lot of information. But a fact among scientists would be some kind of objective measurement or observation that can be seen by anybody, regardless of their political or social affiliation. And the I think the vagueness around that idea is really troublesome. So, for example, it is a fact, and I could show you in the laboratory, that if you increase carbon dioxide in a closed system, that the ability of that system to retain heat will go up. There's no that can be seen by anybody. And there are a number of other scientific facts that get thrown in with this vague concept of fact. And as a result, people are doubting facts of nature. In fact, in some cases, physical laws, because they think that facts are varying.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my comment.
Yeah, I'll let Craig jump in.
I agree it's a huge challenge, but I'm also going to offer that I think we need to find new ways of working together regardless of our agreement or disagreement on the facts. It would be nice if we could agree on the facts, but we are increasingly seeing that that's not the case. So we have two choices. We can either argue with our adversary about the facts, and sometimes those arguments can get very contentious, can bog us down, or to cause one or more people to walk away from the table. Or we can move off of that and we can say, okay, I believe that, you know, this thing is a fact. You don't. Fine. I accept that. But what are your underlying interests? Why are you so wed to your way of thinking? What is it that is so important to you? And here's what is so important to me. And regardless of our agreement or disagreement on the facts, how can we move forward and find a solution that meets both of our interests? I'm sorry that it's that way, but when you do have an unresolvable disagreement about the facts, there still has to be a way forward, and that is to understand each other's interests, understand why somebody is so beholden to their way of believing.
And when you say understand each other's interests, not understand their interest with the intention of using that as a way to say, oh, you're being defensive,
right?
Because...
That's right. Thanks for clarifying that. It is truly seeking to understand where they are coming from.
All right. Well, believe it or not, we have to take another break. If you'd like to join our conversation about bridging the political divide, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you are listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the attempt to make our political discourse a little bit nicer. Joining me today, Craig Freshley. He is a professional meeting moderator and creator and organizer of Makeshift Coffee Houses. Philip Bartlett is chair of the Maine Democratic Party. Demi Kazunas is chair of the Maine Republican Party. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Nate. Once elected, why is it the responsibility of our elected representatives to continue to advocate for their positions to their constituents? Shouldn't the megaphone be handed back to the public once the election is over?
It's a combination thereof. It's really important that people continue to make their voices heard to their elected officials. But we also elect folks to be in leadership positions in government to represent our interests. And so once you've had an election and there's been an argument about whether to go this way or that way, then I think that the representative needs to be an advocate for what they believe people elected them to do. But it never ends. I mean, we really encourage everybody to reach out, to write, to call, to show up, to make sure that your elected officials are constantly hearing what your opinions are.
Absolutely correct on that. We have, for an example of this, is there are districts in southern Maine that voted as a district no on question two, which is the 3%, and yet the person that was elected to represent them believes that it should be yes on question two. So when they go up to the legislature, who do they represent, themselves and how they were voted for, because people knew what they stood for or what the public voted on a referendum question. And it's a very complicated situation.
We'll go to Dave, who's calling from Denmark. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. First, I'd like to say thank you for your patience. I had some technical difficulties. But my comment, if you want to bridge the political divide, I'd say a great starting place is in academia. You got to get Marx out of the humanities, because in economic circles, no one talks about him. Even in his own lifetime, everything that Karl Marx stood for was repudiated. What you're seeing now, if we had stuck with that and kept him out of the picture, someone like a Bernie Sanders never should have had a prayer. But what it shows is that in a country, our young people, they want to change the world. They want to be a part of something. And it doesn't matter what it is, but they want change. And what I feel that is happening on the national level is that our candidates they're jumping on that, and they're politicizing literally everything. And what I find that what has contributed to this is a lack of intellectual diversity on campuses. Because if I were to go in as a conservative, I'm a fiscal conservative, but I vote libertarian. If I were to go in and present a pro-2A stance or a pro-life stance or any of those kinds of things that are a little bit more to the right, I'll get called any name except my given name in response. And then you look at groups like Antifa and things like that. That's one totalitarian group trying to call totalitarianism in another.
Okay, Dave, thanks. Craig, do you think Dave has a point? Are our college campuses breeding this partisan
I think that our college campuses should breed intellectual exploration, and Karl Marx should be welcome on college campuses, as should extreme right-wing positions. College campuses, academia in general, is the place for all points of view to be considered and for people to be exposed to a wide variety of opinions and facts.
Dave, thanks for your call. We're going to move to Lewiston and Bilal. Hi, Bilal. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling. Hello, Bilal. Are you there? Okay. We'll go then to Tammy calling from Charleston. Hi, Tammy. Go ahead.
Hi. I have three things, and then I will get off the phone and let you go. I do wish the media, including my favorite NPR, would use personal names as little as possible when addressing government policies and activities. For example, instead of saying Donald Trump's wall or Donald Trump's administration and their possible involvement with Russian interference in the election process, you could say the proposed wall between Mexico and the U.S., or you could say the investigation into whether Russia interfered with the 2016 election process, because the second example state actual facts and they avoid mentioning names as much as possible, meaning that you're hitting people's hot buttons when you mention names. On issues around whether they are appropriate for consideration, these issues are easier to contemplate and discuss if names are not involved. Furthermore, if you state the facts, people will come to reasonable conclusions, and anything else feels like overkill and manipulation. And I'm wondering if it's ever occurred to the media that polarization has been created and continues to be maintained by them because of the way they continually bring up names. Second, rather than leave policy questions for the most part to special interests, it's up to us as individuals to communicate with our politicians, ask questions, express frustration or satisfaction around articles that are under consideration. I don't think our politicians hear enough from us. And last, in my high school, public speaking was a required course, and it gave us ways to respectfully, calmly discuss issues with one another, regardless of whether we agreed with the opponent's perspective. Based upon the way I hear people speak today, I don't think this course is being is in most schools. And if this is correct, it would seem prudent to bring it back. Thank you.
Wow. I agree with that caller 100%. I think we are talking more about people than issues. We need to be much more issue based. And I do believe that schools need to be much more broader, which is what Craig said, in their opening up of history, of basically all viewpoints, so there is no censorship going on in schools. And we need to be open. We need to communicate with our politicians, because I think so many people do not communicate with. Once we elect somebody and we send them off to Augusta or to our federal government, we don't communicate with them enough to keep them knowing what their constituents feel.
And Craig, and Phil, this is what you're preaching, right?
It is. So, you know, when I was in high school, I was a debater, and we did values debating and had to argue both sides of every issue. Yep. So abortion, the death penalty, immigration, these big issues, I had to actually construct and make passionate arguments on both sides. And what you learn from that is just extraordinary, because you have to think about what are the best arguments on the other side, and you find that you develop a lot more nuance in your actual position, because you recognize there are legitimate concerns and little legitimate values that drive your opponents. So it's incredibly important to understand that everybody's coming at this in good faith. People are passionate because they really care. They care about how our society functions. They care about how to make our country better. And if you start at that place of respect, you can get so much further in the discussion.
Craig?
Well, I just want to emphasize the notion of individual responsibility. The caller's second point was that it's up to us, and it's not really legit to blame corporate influence and other third-party special interests if we don't pick up the phone and call our politicians, lobby, and vote ourselves. We as the people actually hold the power. We need to exercise it.
All right. Well, we just have a couple minutes left. But, Craig, I know you have some guidelines on how, even if you're not able to come to a makeshift coffee house, what are some guidelines you would give someone about talking to someone from a different political point of view? How to have a meaningful conversation?
Well, first, I would begin with a little bit of a self-check on why I want to have the conversation, and am I truly humble and open-minded? Am I really open to what somebody, do I really, really want to learn where someone else is coming from? If so, start the conversation with a question, not a comment. It's not about wanting to persuade someone else where I'm coming from, but walk across the road to that neighbor and ask them why they put a Hillary poster in their yard or a Trump sticker on their bumper. Ask them, and with a genuine desire to hear the answer. That's my basic advice. Start from a position of humility and open-mindedness and start with a question.
All right. Well, great advice. And the show is a little shorter today because of our special day, the fundraising drive for our strategic vision here at Maine Public. But I want to thank you all for being here. Demi Kazunis, chair of the Maine Republican Party, Philip Bartlett, chair of the Maine Democratic Party, and Craig Freshley, a professional meeting moderator and creator and organizer of Makeshift Coffee Houses. And we'll make sure and put information about the Makeshift Coffee Houses on the Maine Calling Facebook page. John Keimel ran the board today. Sam Dearen answered your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.